On this episode of the Oklahoma Breakdown with Iker and Lehman, presented by Riverwind Casino, we discuss some of the things that stood out to us on OU's spring roster. Then we talk some OU hoops and thunder in FGTB. And of course, we give you our winners and losers of the weekend. Please download and subscribe to the podcast, rate it 5 stars and write us a good review. Follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Just search Oklahoma Breakdown on any of those and you'll find us. All right, our man Michael Hostie will kick this thing off. It's time for the Oklahoma Breakdown. It's a beautiful Sunday, March 17th, and you're listening to the Oklahoma Breakdown with Iker and Lehman, presented by Riverwind Casino. Riverwind is Oklahoma City's premier casino experience, and there's so many reasons why Riverwind is consistently voted OKC's number one casino, but it all starts with their amazing variety of gaming thrills and excitement. Riverwind's beautiful award-winning environment plays host to more than 2,800 of the latest electronic games with a huge selection of table games, including blackjack, blackjack match, roulette, and Teddy's favorite, craps. No matter what your game, Riverwind has it in spades and hearts. And to learn more about their gaming promotions and entertainment options in the month of March, all you got to do is visit Riverwind.com. Riverwind Casino, simply the best. Hope everyone had a fantastic St. Patrick's Day weekend. Some celebrate on Saturday. Those are the normal people. The crazies celebrate on Sunday. Ted, the people that really get after it. But yeah, I hope everyone had a safe and fun St. Patrick's Day weekend. It is the best. What an awesome holiday.
Just, hey, whatever excuse you need, right? And St. Patty's Day happens to be, it's like the beginning of spring, right? Let's get it going.
Absolutely. Now, please leave us a 5-star review and a nice comment while you're at it. And also, if your business wants to advertise on the podcast, please email us at theoklahomabreakdown@gmail.com. Let's jump into the OU football stuff. And let's start with the spring roster. And throughout the next couple of weeks, we're going to do our spring roster breakdown position by position like we've done the last couple of years. But when they release this roster, you and I go through it pretty thoroughly. And there's always some things that really jump out initially. And then we start asking some questions to some people. But when the roster first came out, Ted, what really jumped out to you?
We have a bunch of tight ends. And that's something that we've been talking about. To me, that was something that's really exciting. We've got depth there. We've got experience there. We've got a couple of guys that perhaps could be, there's some star power there. We've gone from having really one guy and maybe was playing a little bit out of position to where we may have four legitimate players at tight end right now. That's, and maybe more than that. To me, that's the biggest last season to this season, turnaround in a position group that, and it's early. We'll have to see how these guys come around. But to me, that's the biggest kind of flip from last season.
Yeah, you look at it. And one of the initial things that jumped out to me was Bower Sharp. Now, we've talked quite a bit about him. Really like the stuff we've heard about the mentality he's got, the way that he carried himself throughout winter workouts. But 6'4", 250. That's kind of exactly what you're looking for at the tight end position. Mm-hmm. So you look at him, you look at Devon Mitchell, 6'3", 255, Jake Roberts, 6'4", 251. I don't know what the level of play is going to look like at the tight end spot, but they're going to look the part. I mean, it's not half the battle, but it certainly doesn't hurt when you look at the measurables perspective for that position. You just feel so much better already than where that position was at a year ago.
It's not close. And another name that I was told, I'll use the exact term for Bauer Sharpe, the truth. Bauer Sharpe is the truth. Okay, so that was pretty good. But another name that came up at tight end that I had to do a double take, forgot he was even on the roster, Hampton Fey, the transfer. I think it was at Michigan State he transferred from. But another 250 pounder. They really liked what he's done during the offseason is start spring ball off with a really good bang. So I love it. And I know you do too. We've talked about this a lot with the tight end position and the ability to use multiple guys personnel wise in the running game. Build on your play action package. There's so much you can do with the tight end position. So fingers crossed, it looks like it could be a spot that went from a real position of weakness. And remember last spring, what they had like random guys trying to fill in to play tight end. So that position was stunted last year from the very beginning. We're starting off in a totally different spot this year.
Yeah, Hampton Fey, and I remember seeing him on the sideline during games last year and just looking at his frame going, okay, there could be something there. I think he's another one of those guys that was a quarterback.
Yeah. It
So
was Bauer Sharpe's the truth and Hamp Fay. So
he
it's a
is,
good sign.
6'5", 247. Is what he is listed at. So I mean, maybe he's one of those guys that could come out of nowhere and be a significant contributor. I'm not sure. I don't expect Hampton Faye all of a sudden to be catching 50 passes and racking up yards, but if he can be a do a little bit of everything type tight end, we talk about the absolute need for this offense to have a little more versatility from a personnel grouping standpoint. So maybe it's Hampton Faye. I know that we all have very, very high expectations for Mitchell, with how highly recruited he was, but Faye has been in, he's been in college a lot longer. So maybe he's a guy that can help just take a little of that pressure off Mitchell to get on the field right away. But if Mitchell's ready to go, I mean, then he's ready to go. That's kind of just where my head's at with it.
Well, I wanted to ask you this question because you've got obviously you played the position, but have like a good view of how it works. It seems like a difficult position for a true freshman to play because there's a lot of protection stuff. A lot of times you're blocking who typically are the freakiest players on the field. You got the route stuff. It seems like a lot of times you can be the move guy with motions, and what does that mean in the running game? Trying to ID guys. It doesn't seem like an easy position for a true freshman. So, like my thinking is, it may take some time for Mitchell to come around.
I think other than quarterback, tight end is the most mentally challenging position because of everything you have to know. You have to know formations, you have to know motions, you got to know all of the route concepts, you have to know all the run blocking concepts, and you have to know all the pass protection. You have to know everything as a tight end. And that's why when you've got a good one or you got a couple good ones, it's an absolute weapon. But there's a lot mentally for that position. And to ask a true freshman to come in and digest all of that really, really quickly, sometimes it can take a while. So, Hampton Faye has been there, Bauer Sharpe, he's been playing college football. I don't know how quickly he can get up to speed, but you would assume he's got a little more experience than Devon Mitchell's got. But yeah, I think the fact that Jake Roberts has played as much football as he has, he's going to be a guy that they're extremely comfortable with putting out there for a lot of snaps. You've got, maybe if Hampton Faye really is a factor, you've got four guys at your disposal when last year you had one. You had Stogner, and that was really the only guy that I think they actually trusted at the position to put him out there.
Yeah, I think that it may be a position where it's going to be really hard to predict what the ceiling may be. It could be really, really high, but we don't know. But I'm pretty confident saying that the floor of the position is going to be much higher than it was last year. I mean, I think we're going to be in a good spot.
I completely agree. Did we just do our tight end preview without knowing? We're still going to do one, but that
maybe so.
That was a lot of tight end talk. Now, anything else? A couple other things that really stood out to you from the spring roster they released?
I think overall our team is progressing in a pretty good direction. I would have liked to see the defensive line a little bit bigger, but you know, I think that's one of those things. It's unfortunately going to take some time, I guess.
That's the number one thing I look at when they put this out. I mean, it is every time, and I'm not entirely sure what's going on. Right, when you think about it, I mean, Grayson Halton, we've talked about with Jacob Lacey having to medically retire. We've talked about the fact that a guy like Grayson Halton's got to step up and he's got to take weight gain extremely seriously. And then it comes out he's 6'2", 284. Mm-hmm. I mean, 284 pounds just is not going to hold up down in and down out in the SEC. It's just not. Yeah. Unless all of a sudden Grayson Halton turns into Aaron Donald, which let's not even do that. You got Marcus Strong at 282 pounds. You got Sears at 289. Ashton Sanders at 284. Ted, it's just not big enough. And I know that it's only March, right? But winter is in my opinion, those winter workouts, that's like the easiest time to gain weight. If you're going to put weight on, you would want to see jumps for those guys during this time. And I don't know, man. I liked seeing David Stone at 283. I think that he's taking it seriously. I'm not worried about him weighing that. I think he's got time. So does Jaden Jackson. Jaden Jackson's going to be 300 pounds in the blink of an eye. But these other guys that have been in the program, Dejon Terry's the only defensive lineman over 300 pounds. Yeah. That's an issue. It's an issue, and you would assume it's going to be addressed, but it's just strange to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. Every single guy needs to add 10 at a minimum. Would like to see everyone add like 12 to 14. I mean, you wish you could just go in there and start clicking 300 pounds on everyone, but on all these guys, if they've clearly, they're not easy gainers. These guys, which can mean some good things, you know, like the body composition, they're all some leaner guys, but yeah, everyone needs to gain at least 10 pounds by the time the season starts. We'll see if that happens. I don't know. It's been a long time coming where we would hope that they would have added more weight by now, but I don't know. And I don't know what they're telling them either. You know, I would be shocked if they don't want those guys adding some size, but I don't know. It seems like it's been a recurring issue for some time for Oklahoma across the front.
You have to, I mean, you just have to be so explosive and strong to play the interior defensive line in the 280s. You got to be like a special athlete to really, really hold up and make plays around that 285 mark as a defensive tackle.
And it, you will get away with what you can get away with, right? And the bigger and heavier you are, the more you can get away with. You can play defensive line at 285 pounds, but you better be low. You better have great technique. You better be explosive as hell, and you better not get tired. Right? Because everything's going to be exaggerated as you get tired and you start to stand up a little bit and you're lighter in the tail. It's going to be difficult. So, I will say that, we move these guys quite a bit and we stunt quite a bit, and that seems to be the way that Coach Venables gets past some of the size issues, and he's still going to have that card to play. But it would definitely go a long way if all those guys were 10 or 12 pounds heavier. And it's strange. I hope this is like an NBA roster thing where they're just kind of hiding it from us. And they're just putting everyone's height, the weight out there is the same as last year.
They just want us to be alarmed for no reason. Like, they're just messing with us with the defensive
Just
line
messing with
weights.
us.
I hope that's the case, but you look at a couple of the edge guys. I mean, Ethan Downs at 6'4", 265. I think that's right where you want him to be. I think that that's not too light. It's not too heavy. I think that he's kind of a power guy, right? There's not, I wouldn't say he's got a ton of twitch, so might as well be a little heavier and play to your strengths, play with power at 265. PJ being listed at 6'4", 240 after what Coach Venables told us on the podcast. What's going on there? That's where I do feel like they're hiding something from us.
I
240.
know. That's what he was listed at before, right?
Yeah. So did they just forget to update it? Which is fine
I
if
don't
they
know.
did. But I saw that. I looked at it with not right. No chance.
That's the same thing I was thinking. Because he said 265 by spring ball, right? Is it that what he said?
I don't remember exactly the time period, but he said 265.
Yeah,
Maybe
he
it was
said
by the
265
season,
by the
but
season. Yeah.
you would expect him to be in the 250 to 255 range.
Yeah.
So not sure
I
what's
know.
going
I
on with
saw it,
that.
but I'm choosing to not look at it. Just a typo, hopefully.
Yeah, could be. Now, Danny Okoye being listed at 6'3", 255 already is, I saw that and went, that'll work. And I think he's an older guy as a freshman.
Right.
And we talk a lot about the freshman that can help right away. Maybe if he can develop a couple of go-to pass rush moves, seems like they've been really pleased with his explosiveness and his athleticism. You look at the size right where it needs to be. Sounds like he's a strong guy for a freshman. Maybe he's one of these guys that can help right away in, some form or fashion.
Yeah, I think physically he'll have it. And where they're going to play him is a position that can be played by a freshman. We've seen it quite a bit. So I think it's possible. I wonder what the gap is from, because a lot of these guys, like take David Stone and Jane Jackson, for example, played at the IMG Academy. They got like legit defensive line coaching. So like I think the gap for them, there's going to be a lot of carryover. I don't know what that is for Okoye. If he's been coached well, he should be able to contribute in some manner pretty quickly.
Yeah. No, he's definitely a guy to keep an eye on. Offensive line, I liked seeing Troy Everett up to 305. Talked about it throughout the season last year. He was just too light. He needed to get stronger, needed to add weight, and looks like he has done that, and he's going to have every opportunity to win that starting center job during spring ball. We talked about Logan Howland getting up to 310. He's listed at 306. So he's right there, which is it's impressive because it lets me know that he is taking putting weight on seriously, which I always appreciate. Garen Hatchett, the transfer, 6'5", 302. So we'll see if is he a guy that could be the center. He's definitely an interior guy. If he's going to be a guard and want to challenge for a starting guard spot, Bill is going to want him to be heavier than that. So we'll see what that number looks like when the fall rolls around. But if that's going to be a starting guard for you, he's going to need to put it on a few pounds. Eugene Brooks, listed at 334. In my opinion, too heavy for a true freshman. I don't think you need to be 335 pounds as a true freshman. He was a guy, from what I understand, that had some really bad weight on during high school, worked really, really hard to get rid of it. And that's why he improved as much as he did as a player, because of that newfound discipline and keeping his weight down. I don't think you need to balloon it up to 334. So I am interested to get out to practice and see just what he looks like physically. But the last thing you want is for a guy to come in and to immediately struggle with his weight. Now, the guy can play, so we'll see, but I would prefer that number to be lower than it is right now. And I say that I haven't even seen the kid practice yet. So maybe I completely change my opinion after I watch him move. I'm like, okay, 334 carries it great, looks great, moving great. If that's the case, I will come on here and say, no issues, no concerns. But that is a heavy number for a true freshman.
Yeah, it's a big boy. Yeah, and if he can carry that, and it's a lot. It's a, we're not expecting him, I guess, right now to be a starter, but it's a long day at 335 pounds if you're a starter carrying that for 70 or 80 reps. But I guess cautiously optimistic that it's that could be a good thing. He carries it fine and he can play there. And maybe that's why that number hasn't moved a whole lot. I don't know, but I like to see Troy Everett up. It sounds like his name came up a lot whenever they were talking about winter conditioning and guys that had a really good offseason.
I like his attitude. If he can improve, I think that he can. He's
How much
got.
is you think he's gained? Because he was pretty small. Was he 270s when he came?
He was, if I had to guess from, when he was starting games last year, I bet he's up 15 pounds.
Significant.
I think he was probably around that 290 number. So yeah, it's good to see him. He's got some natural leadership to him. He's got a good attitude, fun personality. So I think that he's a guy that clearly is taking it seriously and wants to be the starting center. So we'll see how he practices throughout spring. But yeah, I think that's a positive sign. Then the only last couple things that stood out, Stutzman up to 241. It's just funny. Stutzman at 241. Meanwhile, Kip Lewis at 214.
Yeah, Kip Lewis he's been stuck at that 214 number, hadn't he? I think that's a good number for Stutzman. He's close to 6'4" if he's not listed at 6'4". So he's got a big frame to carry a lot of weight. He's a fairly lean guy anyways, and he runs plenty well. I think that's a really good number for Stutzman. Kip Lewis is 214. It's not ideal. I vary from pretty much Everyone else looks at that number and he's too small, including the head football coach. But I don't worry about the number at all. If you can find me film of Kip Lewis getting blown off the football, getting run through as a tackler, then okay, we'll have a conversation there. I just don't see that. So that's where I'm at with his weight. Would I like him to be 225, put 10 pounds on? Yeah. But if you can't do it and you're 214, you just better play lower.
Play low, play fast, play with
There you
great
go.
anticipation, Kip. You got it. Now,
Yep.
I do think he'll be, once the season rolls around, he'll be a close to a 220. That's, or at least that's my expectation. We'll see. It's clearly not easy for him to add weight. One number that I saw people discussing, Andrell Anthony down to 183 pounds. And something that maybe a lot of people don't know is, he is not a thick guy to begin with, but I've got no issue with him being a little lighter as he rehabs his knee. In fact, when I blew my knee out my rookie year, that's what I did. It is kind of a rehab strategy to help you get back quicker, to be a little lighter, and then as your knee gains strength, gains power, gains explosiveness, then you start getting back up to your playing weight. So I've got no issue with Andrell being a little lighter because I think it's basically, I'm assuming it's part of his recovery strategy. So I'm not worried about it. I think when the season rolls around, he's going to be 100%. He's going to be closer to, 190 pounds, maybe even a couple pounds heavier than that. And he's going to look really, really good. But I saw some people talking about that number, going, what's going on there? And I think it's part of him rehabbing that knee. So I don't think it's anything to be worried about.
No, I agree. He's a super lean guy already, and it's not like, I guess what I'm saying is a decent amount of that weight loss probably, I bet you have some atrophy, right, in that surgery leg, probably in the quad and in the lower leg. You lose quite a bit of muscle there with the inaction. So yeah, I'm not worried about it. As long as he is back healthy and he can still fly, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I'm worried about the D line. I'm not worried about Andrell Anthony. I think
Yeah.
he's gonna be just fine. Now, Sooners only have a couple of spring practices in the books. Going to spring break now, which is what a lot of people are doing. Have a safe spring break. People
Yeah.
enjoy it, relax, have a good time. But I've only had one padded practice, Ted, so it's early, but anything really standing out so far?
Well, I mean, I've heard some names that are off to a really good start, and a lot of it shouldn't surprise you. Deion Burks, we've heard about him pretty much since the day he showed up on campus, and the reviews of his play have been incredible, so it's good to continue to hear that. Kendall Dolby, sounds like he's off to a really good start. Stutzman, off to a really good start. And another name that really built, you heard a bunch of guys talking about him through the off season, and apparently it's carried over to the first handful of practice. Fabecchi, the North Texas transfer, offensive lineman, sounds like he continues to really impress guys.
Yeah, Wee Woo is, he looks the part as well. He's, I think, listed at 326, carries it pretty well. So, yeah, the excitement
Is he
about
going to be guard, you think? Play it on the inside?
I think they're going to try him everywhere.
Yeah.
It's going to be a journey to find the best five.
Yeah.
With all the different pieces, you got some young guys that have been in the program. You got some new freshmen. You've got all the transfers. It's like putting a puzzle together, and you're trying to find your best five. And the weird thing about offensive line, it's not always your most talented five. You got to find the five that play the best together, and that can take some time, but that's exactly what spring practice is for. I'm just expecting Deion Burks to be the best football player ever at this point.
I know. I almost feel bad for him, right? The expectations are going to be ridiculous by the time any of the fans actually see him play.
But it does sound like the battles between him and Kendall Dolby there in the slot are about the most competitive thing that's going on the practice field so far. So excited to get out and watch some of that.
Yeah, that's going to be good. And the names that you've heard that are really standing out are exactly what you'd want. You know, your main leaders on defense, Dolby in the slot at Cheetah, Burks at the wide receiver spot, the tight end position with several guys looking good, and then, you know, some good reviews early from the offensive line group.
Let's talk some basketball. Football guys talking basketball. But first, Love's Travel Stops is now offering a nationwide 10 cent per gallon discount on gas and auto diesel. Just download the Love's Connect app and scan your barcode at the prompt on screen and watch that price drop 10 cents per gallon. Across the country, the Love's Connect app unlocks exclusive deals, can help any traveler plan their route or meal on the highway. So before you hit the road, be sure to download the Love's Connect app to save 10 cents per gallon and experience the country's best highway hospitality at Love's Travel Stops. Love's also has you covered if you forget your phone charger or headphones with their expanded mobile to go zone. And of course, don't forget to grab yourself some of that delicious Java Amore.
And celebrate with a Schooner All-American Ale, the official craft beer of OU Athletics from Coop Ale Works. Named after the iconic Sooner Schooner that races across Owen Field after an OU score, you can join in on the celebration with an ice-cold beer from Coop Ale Works. You can enjoy it at the Palace on the Prairie, at OU Athletic events, at the bar, at the tailgate, and in the comfort of your own home. For more information on Schooner All-American Ale, visit schoonerale.com. Must be 21 to purchase. Please drink responsibly. Schooner All-American Ale, the taste of game day.
And we love Simple Modern. Simple Modern is an Oklahoma-owned company whose mission is to exist to give generously, and they do. Simple Modern has given away millions to more than 100 nonprofit partners in the last 8 years, and they give away at least 10% of profits each year. We love supporting a company that's working to make a difference in Oklahoma and beyond. And Simple Modern products are also the perfect swag for any small business owner. You can customize tumblers, water bottles, and coffee mugs to give to a current or potential customer. Check them out at simplemodern.com. Football guys talking basketball, FGTB. Full disclosure. Every other part of this episode was recorded before this part because we were like, hey, let's knock it out, except for where OU ends up in the bracket, and then we'll be able to talk about it and kind of break it down. Ted, they didn't make it.
Crazy.
The first team out.
It was the way we finished the season. It was like, oh my gosh, did we open the door to not be able to make the tournament? You kind of had to watch some other teams, and some of those conference tournaments didn't go the way you wanted, but it felt like everyone was still saying that we're in. So I was pretty shocked.
They were essentially the next team in. They're the first one out. It's brutal for Porter Moser. Still has not taken Oklahoma to the tournament. I feel for Rivaldo Soares and Javion McCollum, Hughley, the guys that got injured, where if you got to imagine if this team was able to stay healthy, they would have been in for sure. I don't know how their current injury situation was factored in by the committee, but man, I don't know if they just didn't want to put nine teams from the Big 12 in or what, but that sucks. It hurts.
Were they too confident that they were going to make it? Like, would you approach the TCU game differently?
I assume if those guys were healthy enough, they would have played.
Yeah.
Because
all we can do.
But that's a good question for Porter Moser. Hey, could a couple of those guys gone in that game? But I do think they thought they had done enough. I mean, all the bracketology guys thought they had done enough.
Yeah. Man, that's frustrating for that group. You know, we've seen way too much of this recently for Oklahoma, whether it's football, whether it's basketball. When you play just barely like on the line and you leave everything open to in this instance, you leave it up to a committee or you leave it up to one call by an official on the field. Like, we have not given ourselves very much room to operate. Everything has just been right there on the line lately, and we've gotten the bad end of it a lot recently.
They had no bad losses.
No, all quad one.
18-6. I believe I saw what they were 18-6 when they had all of their guys. After they started getting banged up, they didn't finish the season strong.
Yeah.
I mean, they left the door open to being left out. And you mentioned it, just a couple of the conference tournaments. It's like everything that had to have happened. It was like the Murphy's Law situation for OU not making the tournament. Like, everything that could go wrong for them not to get in went wrong for them.
I was watching that NC State North Carolina game last night. Like, oh my God, this is not a good result for Oklahoma, right? And I'm sure there was plenty of other things that went down, but you know, here's it sucks. I hate it. I'm frustrated. I feel like they were a good enough team to get in. I felt all along that once they got out of conference and got into, you know, seeing some new teams, that they were going to be dangerous. Obviously needed to get healthy too. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is they didn't win enough games late, and they played some really bad basketball at times, like really bad. I mean, it's one thing to lose some of those games, but it's another thing to lose some of those games and shoot like 30% from the field and hardly score any points. I mean, it doesn't make a big impression on people.
You're right. They weren't exactly blowing us away down the stretch in conference play, but maybe I just thought they'd get too much benefit of the doubt with the injuries.
Yeah.
But I kind of was just looking at all the bracketology stuff, and everyone still had him in. I think Lenardi, before the selection show, had him, had them as their last team, his last team in, but they end up being the first team out. I think a lot of people are confused. Like, Virginia made it, but ultimately, no excuses, right? You have no one to blame but yourself if you're Porter Moser and his team. You cannot leave it in the hands of the committee. You just can't. You got to finish stronger than they did. But, man, I feel so bad for that group, because to have the start to the season that they had, and then to go through the ups and downs of conference play, but to feel like they still were going to have a chance, maybe it would all come together. Brutal, dude. Absolutely brutal.
Yeah. It's wild. Does this mean anything? Because I know there was conversation about the DePaul stuff, and
I think DePaul filled the opening. So
they did. And I know that that's all been put behind us, but I there was quite a few people that were saying before any of that that Porter Moser would be in serious trouble if they didn't make the tournament this year. Do you feel like that's the case, or?
I certainly think there'll be a conversation. I mean, that 3 years in a row.
It's tough, yeah.
So
And
now
I'm
what?
sure like it's going to be hard to hang on to players now. It's
Well, the interesting thing is what does we talk about what the move to the SEC does for football all the time, but like what does that do for Porter Moser and for basketball? I'm not entirely sure. So, yeah, a brutal selection Sunday. I was worried, I was flipping back and forth between the players, watching Wyndham Clark lip out to force the playoff. What a you talk about brutal endings. But I was just hoping they weren't in the East region because I was flipping back and forth watching the golf, hoping going, oh, I don't want to miss their tile flip it over because it's an exciting moment. And it just never came. Oh.
Yeah, brutal.
What
It's
are we going to
absolutely
do for
brutal.
March Madness now? That's the worst part is we don't. No one feels worse than the players and the coaches. I understand that, but 3 years in a row, we don't get the excitement of at least being able to irrationally advance our team too far in our bracket or fill it out. I miss that
Yeah.
feeling.
Well, that's one of the things that's frustrating is no matter what, like people feel frustrated about this season. And I totally get it. But if you just make it into the tournament, you eliminate a whole bunch of like what went down throughout the season. And everyone's ultimately going to remember the postseason that you made it. And who knows, maybe you go on a run or something, have some excitement. Like if you just get in, a lot of the frustration that happened to get there is like it's all flushed right away. It's like new season right here, off we go. And unfortunately, when you don't make it, it inflames all of those things.
No doubt. I guess, and this is something we talk about later in the episode that we've already recorded. I guess the only thing that makes you feel better is OU baseball completed the sweep against TCU. 6-0 to start conference play.
Hey, number one in the league. That's something to hang your hat on right now.
All right, here's the rest of the episode. All right, moving on to OU women's hoops. We're recording this before the women's selection show. OU projected to be a 5 seed. Ted, with the success that Jenny Baranchuk has had over these last couple seasons, the excitement that she has created for the program, I want them to make a run. I feel like it's time. I feel like they deserve it with what they've put together, but you never know. And that's what makes March Madness so much fun is you never know. But with what they've been able to do this season, just how great they were throughout conference play, bouncing back from the rough non-conference slate. I just really hope they're able to put a run together, man.
Yeah, me too. They got a pretty good starting spot, and they seem like a dangerous team that's gritty. No, that's done a lot more than people expected them to. So I'm optimistic with them. I obviously love Coach Bronchek, and they seem to be a pretty deep team. I mean, I don't know. I don't know much about the women's field, but I know that they had a tough non-con, and just like the men's Big 12 schedule, it wasn't an easy schedule for them, and they had some really nice wins throughout, and it should translate good to the tournament.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people think Texas is one of the best teams in the country. And if you're able to beat them twice on the right day, you can beat anyone.
Yeah.
So let's hope that the Sooners get hot in the tournament. So that's going to be fun to watch. Thunder, they beat on Thursday night, they beat the Luka Doncic-less. That's hard to say. Doncic-less.
It's almost like it's his name should have that at the end of it. That's funny.
The Luka Doncic-less. Dallas Mavericks. I sound so stupid. So they beat them on Thursday night, which that was another absurd 9 p.m. local tip-off there for that one. And SGA's efficiency continues to be fantastic. 31 points on 16 shots. And that, and the other main thing from that game is I think Jalen Williams' ankle is okay after watching him throw down that dunk. Guy tried to break the rim with that. That was one of the more emphatic dunks we've seen from a Thunder player in a long, long time. That was awesome.
How are we shaping up? What do you think the standings race is going to end up with? Because we're getting down, what are they, 14 games left, something like that?
Got 15 games to go because they beat the Grizzlies on Saturday night, 118-112. That took them to 47-20. So I'm excited. I think that, you know, if I had to bet who was going to be the one seed, the Thunder or Denver, I'm probably betting on Denver because they've got the best player in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't think that is any slight to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at all, but Jokic is just, he's that dude, man.
Crazy.
It is. It's just so wildly entertaining to watch. But when you look at, they've got the same record as Denver. One of the good things and one of the important things to remember is they've got the tiebreaker over Denver. It could end up coming down to that with how close this thing appears to be taking shape. But yeah, I thought they looked solid against the Grizzlies. Grizzlies did some interesting things, threw some different looks at Shai, and I thought he handled it really well. And the other guys for the Thunder made up for the lack of Shai scoring with some of the stuff that the Grizzlies were doing. So I thought it was a nice team win. Well, all the starters in double figures. Chet was really, really solid. Again, that Grizzlies court just was brutal on my eyes, especially with the Thunder and orange. It was just playing tricks on my mind as I watched that game. But Grizzlies shot a bunch of threes, hit a bunch of threes, played really hard. Still Thunder walk out of there with a victory. So my expectation at this point, and it's funny how the expectations keep increasing as they keep winning games, but I expect them to be the one or two seed, especially with the Karl Anthony Towns situation with Minnesota. I mean, the Clippers have fallen to 4.5 games back. So with only 15 games to go, you know, that's quite a bit to make up. So yeah, I expect him to be the one or two seed, Ted. It's
crazy, right?
I went from, hey, they should make the playoffs before the season to, yeah, they should be the one or two seed. I just don't think you can doubt this team. You can talk about the rebounding. You can talk about the inexperience. At some point, you just have to trust the results. And they just keep winning games. So,
yeah.
Now, does that mean they're going to go into a couple playoff series and just absolutely dominate and go to the Western Conference Finals? And I don't know about that. But as far as the regular season, one or two seeds the expectation now. And I think that's very fair.
Yeah, well, good things happen whenever you've got a player that's up for the MVP and a really good supporting cast and, you know, a good locker room environment. And, you know, and whenever you've got an MVP candidate that's not doing it on like a disgusting usage rate, he's doing it with high efficiency, and there's plenty of other guys that are having great seasons as well. So yeah, man, it's wild that we're in this position, but ain't a bad thing.
One very important thing that happened this week for the Thunder: Shai reached the game limit to make All-NBA and to win MVP. That's something that you got to keep track of now. And he's hit it. The 65 games, he's hit it. So some guys may not hit it, but I think at this point in time, Tim and Jokic for MVP. Jokic probably has a lead right now, but we'll see what happens these last 15 games for the Thunder. But it also makes you wonder, will they, now that he has reached that limit, will they rest him at all down the home stretch, depending on what the standings look like? I don't know, but it's just something to note. Like, he is eligible for all of that stuff now, which is the new rule this season. So it's all on the table for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, which is it honestly makes it more fun. It feels like another thing is on the line for this team that is very attainable. So I was wondering if Shai, I don't know, popped a bottle of champagne or something. It was like, all right, I made it. Congratulations to me.
I'm sure he's qualified, and he's sitting in a really good spot. And there's been a little bit, hadn't there been some MVP fatigue with Jokic recently? Or was that last year?
Yeah, I think the fatigue is gone because he's just so good.
He is. He is. And it looks like he could play in 5-hour basketball games. It looks like he expends no effort at all. It's amazing.
It is amazing to watch, but so is SGA. Okay.
Yeah.
So is SGA. All right, let's finish up.
Yeah, they're amazing in like the exact opposite way.
Yeah. I wouldn't say either guy is hyper athletic. Like, it's not like Shai's an above the rim type of player. Now, he is not what I would call ground bound like Jokic is. Right. But yeah, it is interesting that both guys that I think are going to finish 1 and 2 for the MVP have just unconventional games, man. Just kind of an unconventional approach.
Traditionally, when you think of a center winning the MVP, you think of like Shaq just overpowering people, or some like incredible, athletic guy.
Just Embiid, just enormous,
yeah,
with his skill set and his ability to step out and shoot, but also just punish people at the rim. And then you've got Jokic. It's like a ballet dancer out there, man. Just at 7 feet.
He's almost like a boneless, like he's just like, it's just weird looking, man. It's entertaining as hell, though. I'll say that.
Yeah. All right. Let's finish up with our winners and losers of the weekend. But first,
all you grill masters, listen up. Didier Ranch delivers premium quality beef that is 100% raised in Oklahoma right to your front door. Go to DidierRanch.com, D-I-D-I-E-R, ranch.com to order one of their premium quality beef boxes and use promo code Oklahoma15 for 15% off your order. Filet, ribeye, New York strip, sirloin, steak burgers, they've got it all, and they ship anywhere in the continental U.S., and Oklahomans can get their deliveries in just 1 to 2 days. The only thing better than having a lot of premium beef on the O&D line is having premium beef delivered right to your front door. Didier Ranch, tradition tastes better.
And head to the garage for hand-smashed patties, butter-toasted buns, and some ice-cold beer. It's the perfect spot to watch any big game, and with all the garage locations being open to 10 p.m. or later every night, it's the go-to late-night spot. Visit eatatthegarage.com to find a location near you and order online from the garage in your neighborhood. As always, Ted, kick us off. Who do you have as your winner of the weekend?
I had to go though. OU baseball, they continue to perform really well. They've got the series win over TCU, playing the final game of the series today. Hopefully they get the sweep, but they've got the series win over what's a really good TCU team. And Oklahoma sitting atop the Big 12 standings. They've got a really good season going. Had a really nice, dramatic win. You had a home run, a go-ahead home run in the ninth inning. Plenty of offense. They're getting good pitching from several guys. So they're off to a good start this season, man. But I think we got ourselves a baseball team.
Yeah, that's I am by no means a baseball expert, but seems like the team can score runs. Which, what was it? Frederick comes in and blasts the pinch hit homer in the ninth. By the way, it's a good looking athlete. I
Well, it
got
was a hell of a swing too. 400 footer dead center field. It was
that
awesome.
thing was hammered, and I just I it always comes back to this for me. I just love Skip Johnson so much. Like, I love him so much, and I just want to see that team and that program succeed. And it does feel like a little more investment in the program. And when things like that happen, you want to see the product on the field be good. You just want that for the players, you know what I mean? And so far, so good. Now it's gonna be a long season. That's just how it goes with Big 12 baseball, but yeah, you're on the money, Ted. This team looks like a team that can do some things this year, just as long as they avoid Dallas Baptist.
That damn Dallas Baptist. We play them this week. All right. So
Oh
hopefully we
boy.
lose to them. Hopefully we lose to them, like we always do, and just keep things right because TCU just beat them. All right. TCU just beat them in the series. So we don't want to mess up what's been going for us, and that is getting beat by Dallas Baptist routinely.
Yeah. Who do you have as your loser of the weekend?
I had to go with Mike Boynton. I guess if you're Oklahoma State, you kind of had to go that direction. Just not getting enough out of the program. They're paying for it though. Another bad contract for a basketball coach. Oklahoma State has a history of doing that. But they're just not getting enough there. You've heard Mike Boynton, talk about how, which I think he's a good recruiter, but it's crazy. He hasn't been there very long, and the entire recruiting world has flipped on its head during his tenure. And he's talked about it. Like, recruiting is not really recruiting anymore. So I don't know what Oklahoma State's going to do moving forward. I feel like they're losing a good coach, but I can't knock them for the decision because they're just not winning enough games.
Yeah, 119 and 109 throughout his 7 years, and just did not win enough games in conference play. And the Big 12's grind, man. It's an absolute grind, but I think they only had a 500 record in conference play one season. Only took them to one tournament, and I just think the standards for Oklahoma State are higher than that. It's a bummer for me though, because I've had the opportunity to interview Mike quite a few times. I really like the guy. I think he's all about the right things. It's a results business. And between not winning enough games and the lack of excitement, the lack of support that the program has got, there's been some extremely sparse crowds there at Gallagher-Iba, and I think that they just got to a point where, hey, you gotta infuse some energy back into the fan base, and the easiest way to do it, I guess, is to pay that big buyout and bring someone in new. I don't know, but I am wishing Mike Boynton the best, because I think he's one of the good guys in college basketball. And it's going to be really interesting to see who they hire, because it's a Big 12 job. It's a good job, but
Right.
Oklahoma State has not been, I mean, they have not just experienced a ton of success here recently on the hardwood. So I'm interested to see who they end up landing.
Gottlieb.
Does it make sense? I already saw reports that they said he's not a candidate. That they already told him that. I don't know if that's true or not. I know this. They should definitely talk to Doug Gottlieb and get his thoughts.
Yeah.
I mean, some people
it
may
makes
not.
Sense to me.
Yeah. Some people not may not value his opinion on a lot of things, but the guy knows college basketball. He is constantly watching, constantly tweeting. Like, he is paying attention, and he played there. He's got passion for the program. At the very least, you should bring him on as a consultant for this coaching search if he's not interested in being a candidate. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't know either. Whenever I think about the new direction or what college athletics is looking like, at least in the near term, it feels like a lot of your success is going to be directly tied to how much NIL money you can come up with. And I feel like Doug Gottlieb would be a really good hire in terms of generating interest and NIL dollars for the program. And I think that's the most important thing that they have to have moving forward. I mean, a big NIL fund in basketball is going to do more for you than any name at head coach.
I think that's accurate. I mean, you look at what? Juwan Howard and Jerry Stackhouse, both out. I mean, those are guys that had long, successful NBA careers. And yeah, there's an X's and O's standpoint to it, but it's also, you got to get the dudes, man.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. I don't know. College basketball, it's just, it's hard to figure out right now. It's really hard to figure out.
It's tough. I mean, it's a lot of the same stuff as football. You got transfer portal guys all over the place. It's difficult.
Let's get to my winner and loser. But first, attention business owners, you need Insurica in your life. Insurica is one of the country's largest insurance brokers with 30 offices throughout Oklahoma, Texas, and the Southwest. Insurica is able to customize programs by accessing the latest information from many insurance carriers. They compare and contrast coverage offerings and pricing and orders on a cost-effective, comprehensive program to meet your business's specific needs. If your business partners with Insurica, you'll save huge amounts of money and take back control of your total cost of risk. If your business wants to be best in class, connect with Insurica at Insurica.com. That's Insurica.com.
And head to OpolisClothing.com for our podcast merchandise and the best OU gear out there. That's OPOLISClothing.com. Use promo code TED, TED, for 10% off. It's OpolisClothing.com. Use promo code TED for 10% off. Buttery soft and 10% off.
For my winner of the weekend, thought about going with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I have no clue how the Russell Wilson situation is going to work out there, but getting Justin Fields for a sixth rounder that could convert to a fourth rounder is fantastic value for a guy that has his talent level. He's got, the guy has started a lot of football games in the National Football League, and it's, if that's your backup, I think last season showed you better have a quality backup if you're an NFL team. And to have a guy that's that talented and still has a ton of upside, that seems like a tremendous upgrade from Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph. So well done, Pittsburgh. That's impressive.
Yeah, I think, and I'm probably way more optimistic on Justin Fields as an NFL quarterback than most people. I've seen some really good things from him. It felt like that situation in Chicago, and I don't know what he's like on a day-to-day basis, but it never felt like it was a good fit. And things have to be the right fit to get the most out of your quarterback, you know, within the program, the facility, with the offensive coordinator. It has to be, it has to sync up really well. And it just never felt like it was that way for Fields. So maybe be a little bit different there in Pittsburgh, because, you know, I think he may have an opportunity to play, because I got to tell you, Russell Wilson, he seems like the opposite guy that Mike Tomlin would like. So I'm just, I'm curious how that's going to work.
I will not be surprised if Justin Fields is the starting quarterback for the Steelers. And I know
Boy,
they've come out. It sounds like they've come out and said, no, Russ is going to be the starter. If you want to cause a problem in your locker room, start a quarterback that is worse than the backup. There's not a quicker way to have a bunch of guys go, hey, what the hell are we doing? Then do that. So we'll see, but I will not be surprised if coming there. There's a few stories coming out of training camp early there in Pittsburgh where like Justin Fields looks awfully good. But
And
it,
I there's a lot that he could learn from a good Russell Wilson. Like Russell Wilson at his best, if you could get some of that out of Fields to mimic some of what he was really good at, go a long way.
yeah, no, I hear you, but seems like a solid quarterback situation for the Steelers now. So
I agree.
we'll see how that develops. But my winner of the weekend, I thought about going with NFL offensive lineman, but I ended up going with Aaron Donald. I guess both, because every offensive lineman in the NFL could sleep better at night knowing that Aaron Donald retired. And
Crazy.
we'll see if this retirement sticks. But he was so good this season. I mean, the dude was an absolute menace for 10 straight years. Three-time defensive player of the year. He made first team all pro 8 times, went to the Pro Bowl 10 straight years, all 10 years of his career. He's one of the best football players to ever play the game. Just an unreal player, Ted. And it's strange. I'm going to miss watching him play, even though watching him play still, even though I've been retired for a long time now, still gives me anxiety watching what he did to interior offensive linemen. It was brutal to watch, but also fantastic to watch at the same time. He just so damn good, and a guy that is going out while he is still the best in the game. It's an interesting decision.
You know, it's crazy that you have a player who it really didn't matter what his stats look like, because everyone that has ever watched an NFL football game knows that, well, Aaron Donald's drawing all of the attention from the offensive line and will not get an opportunity against a single blocker, but a handful of times a game. I just totally dominates the offensive game plan. Like there's always guys where you want to know where they are on the field, but there's not a lot of guys that dictate what you're going to do in a given week from the defensive line position.
I will never forget the stories that the offensive lineman for the North team. So when we were at the Senior Bowl, because we were in the same draft class, the guys from the North team telling stories about him and what he was doing to them in practice, the look in their eye, it was like a horror movie when people are talking about the demon or the spirit or the monster, like that type of look in their eye. And so we went and watched the film of him just destroying them. And we all just couldn't believe it. I mean, the guy was incredible. And when I was in Buffalo, we went and played the Rams out at the Coliseum. And our protection plan was, hey, if everything's even, we're going to 99. We just called it 99 protection. If everything, we're going to that guy. And that is just, that's the type of respect that he garnered as a player in the Senior Bowl. I remember, I think I was playing center and Travis Swanson was playing left guard. And I basically told him, hey man, if Aaron Donald's over you, because you're not supposed to blitz in the Senior Bowl, right? I'm just going to flip the protection if I'm sliding away from you. Like let's do each other a solid. Let's just go to that guy. So he just an absolute menace, but just wrecking offensive linemen for a decade, and I'm going to miss watch it, but I think I'm going to be able to watch football with a little less anxiety now.
I think I've told you this story before, but I'm sh listeners probably there's some out there that haven't heard it. But I have a good friend. He's now the defensive line coach at Stanford, but we played together. His name is Ross Kalaji. He was the head strength coach at Wisconsin. He was the defensive line coach at Wisconsin. Played in the NFL for the Baltimore Ravens. And just an incredible guy. Knows the defensive line position like crazy. Well, he was also the head strength and conditioning coach at Pitt when Aaron Donald was there. And I had like talked to him on the phone one time, asked him like how it's going there. And he told me when Aaron Donald was at Pitt, I think it was his sophomore or junior year, that he was an NFL Hall of Famer. So that was whenever he was in college that he knew he was going to be an NFL Hall of Famer. So it's pretty crazy the trajectory that that dude's been on and been an undersized, like what you would consider to be an undersized player the entire time.
Oh, there's no doubt. You walk out and you're like, that guy's not big. I remember vividly thinking that walking on the field with him at the Senior Bowl. I also, once I saw the demolition that he was responsible for the North offensive lineman, I started talking to him in the halls, like introducing myself, like, hey man, what's going on? I'm Gabe. You know, I was trying to butter him up, like no lie. It was just, oh, but an incredible career. I think it has an argument when it comes to the conversation, the best, not only defensive lineman, but like best defensive player we've ever seen. He just an absolute dude. And there was one stat from ESPN that I thought was fascinating. And so over the last 5 years, the NFL average pass rush win rate against a single blocker was 17% for rushers that qualified for the statistic. Aaron Donald had an 18% pass rush win rate against double teams. So the
Crazy.
dude was better on average against two blockers than the rest of the league, like the league average against one. I mean, he's just insane, dude.
That's crazy. Wow.
I
That's
don't know
crazy.
everything that goes into pass rush win rate. That's not easy to say, but I believe it because the guy was unbelievable.
Wow. That's incredible. Wow.
My loser of the weekend, the Big 12 and the ACC, because they admitted that they are inferior to the SEC and Big 10. I mean, that's what happened, right? With the new college football playoff TV deal. You look at this, and there's still a lot to be worked out here. The TV deal is in place, though. 6-year extension through the 2031 playoff, that will pay around $1.3 billion annually. But the SEC and the Big Ten, they're getting more money than everyone else with this deal. And over the contract, you look at it, the SEC and the Big Ten are looking at a combined $700 million, while the ACC and the Big 12 are looking at a combined number somewhere around $400 million. That is a big gap.
It's a big gap, and I don't know how competitively you can ever make up that gap consistently. There's going to be teams that emerge in random years, but I think we're about to move. I don't even think, I know we're about to move to where all the NIL stuff and everything's going to be moved into the athletic department. And when you're operating with a smaller budget than your competitor, because this is just the playoff money. This isn't even including the conference network deals like regular season. So, I mean, you add, what was the payout going to be was it like 20 million for SEC and Big Ten schools and like 12 million for ACC and Big 12? Is that
Yeah.
what it was? I you
I think
it,
ACC was 13-ish and Big
13.
12 was 12-ish because they based it off how many teams had made the playoff. And that's kind of how they came up with these percentages. Yeah, how many teams made the playoff with what the conferences look like now. So
Yeah.
it is.
40% more money in addition to what? Almost twice as much money in the regular season payout. I mean,
Adds
that's hard
up,
to stay
man.
competitive with. Yeah, there's no doubt. Now, I did like that, like an appearance, you get the individual payout now, right? Instead of it being dispersed to the entire conference.
I kind of feel like that actually went away.
Okay.
I could be
Well,
wrong. I didn't.
I think maybe that's for the non Power Five group,
Yeah.
if you make the
Let's just pretend like we're right.
playoff. Right. Well, because
But
I know that those other conferences were upset about it,
the
that it's not a conference dispersion.
yeah, and we'll see what the format ultimately ends up being. It seems like it's going to be a 14 team playoff. There's definitely going to be a discussion about automatic qualifiers and what that looks like, especially for the SEC and the Big Ten. Those two conferences have shown a willingness to throw their weight around now, and they got the revenue share. So we'll see what they push for next. But I think if the conference championship games aren't going away, if it's going to be a 14-team playoff, then it needs to be the five conference champs that get in, and then nine at-larges. That's how I would do a 14-team playoff. But we'll see. But I think my number one thought when I saw this was it's another reminder that OU's leadership made the right decision leaving for the SEC. And you could say this is just part of a domino effect from that decision, right? And I think that's a fair way of looking at it. But OU's leadership envisioned things like this happening. And I think they made the move and were proactive about it before they, I think they made the move when they had some leverage as opposed to being too late to make the move. So OU's going to be getting more than $21 million annually from this college football playoff TV deal. And
Yeah.
when you talk
Well,
about 6 years, that stuff adds up, man. And it's important for the program.
when it's all said and done and they get a full share of the SEC contract, and then you add in the college football playoff, they'll be getting well over twice as much as they would have been getting in the Big 12. Now, those numbers may have looked different, obviously, if OU and Texas are still in the Big 12, but they made the right move. And you just hope that competitively you can get up to speed. And, you're bridging the gap financially between those teams that you were trying to compete with before. I mean, and that's a huge piece of the pie. So, it should help us out tremendously.
That all being said, this is all going to change when Florida State leaves the ACC, right? That seems
Yeah.
like it's
Well,
going to happen sooner rather than later. And from
think
my
about it like,
understanding, there's a clause in the contract where it can be reworked if there's more realignment. And this is, and I'm not a lawyer, but the fact that your conference came out, it took less money than some other conferences. That's got to be very frustrating for Clemson and Florida State. I don't know legally what type of ammo that gives them, but it just seems like a matter of time where at least Florida State is going to get out and go somewhere else. I just don't know what happens to this TV deal if that takes place.
I know that Florida State is probably the most vocally upset or have been. But just think, if you're Clemson, if it weren't for Clemson over that playoff span, the ACC would be nothing, right? Absolutely nothing. And they're not getting rewarded for it hardly at all. So if Florida State wants to partner, probably on the phone with Clemson talking about it right now, because Clemson's been a huge part of the playoff era, and the ACC not rewarded for it at all. And it's going to be difficult to see the SEC. They can't watch the SEC and the Big Ten make that amount of money over the top of what they're making and feel like they can be competitive.
Completely agree. We'll see. I'm sure this is not the last time we're going to discuss this.
Yeah, I think it'll be a constant. I think how many times will the format change before we actually have a 14? We haven't even had a 12-team playoff yet, by the way. But which I don't know, is the 12-team playoff format set yet? Do we know exactly that it's set, how
It's
it's going to
the
play out?
yes, it's the four. High four or five highest ranked conference champs, and then seven at-larges. Is that right?
I
Just
don't know.
let me know when it rolls around, okay?
Right,
Just
right,
let me know.
right.
Birthday shout outs. Happy 28th birthday to Andrew Calvert.
Happy 37th birthday to Spencer Brown.
Happy 64th birthday to Renee Cochran.
And happy birthday to
I'm guessing that was supposed to be Tim. I'm guessing I messed
Tim,
that up.
the Goat Mailman Hall.
Tim, I'm guessing his name's not Time, which is what I typed. Tim, the Goat Mailman Hall. Hopefully that's right.
Nice.
Happy
The
birthday,
goat.
Tim or Time. On that note, episode 405 in the books. We'll have a new podcast that'll drop on Wednesday. Just a reminder, please subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Hope you all have a great start to your week. And until next time, I appreciate y'all for listening. Do what you always do, Oklahoma. Take care of each other.
Just one more time.